future we'll get axed in the next election.
No, I didn't say that.
What's the idea of just continuing it for the rest of this biennium?
Well, I think that's a political judgment.
Yeah.
The question did not say for when and how long. And it's an enactment of the legislature.
It's not a constitutional
amendment. It's not a constitutional amendment, so it can't be done. But, Jim, is there a budgeted amount for county administration of the program into the next biennium?
No, there is a bill that's in the House Revenue Committee right now to include in the budget some money.
How much?
There, it's blank.
What do you think?
I don't know what they're asking for.
Since they're not here, they won't get it. Next?
They're not here. 7 million or something.
I think that's right. It's 5 or 7 million.
Yeah,
now,
like
the
that.
Total biennial cost at the bottom is 480.6 million. Is that correct?
For this biennium?
For the next biennium.
538.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're looking at last.
Okay. 538.8.
Right. And that does, neither of those figures includes the costs to the local
well,
government.
What I was getting at is I understood the Department of Revenue sent to the Executive Department a figure higher than 538.8, but it was shaved. Do you know what the figure they sent over was?
I did.
540 something?
I think it was more than that.
550, 560.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
So 12 to 20 million more?
Yeah, it could easily be. I could find that out too. I don't have that.
Well, one of the reasons is I don't know why that was shaved, other than maybe just that was the last adjustment made prior to balancing things. But somehow somebody's got to come to grips with that difference.
I think they're cutting it pretty close there. So we have to get down and do our own full analysis and find out where they got the number. And we've been working on that.
Okay.
So.
Can I ask you, Mr. Chairman, what you're indicating is the fact that the estimates of the Revenue Department to maintain the program under our premise was higher than what the governor recommended.
Yes. And he did not make a change in the funding of the program. That is, he didn't cut.
No, there's no change in the formula.
So, I just got the.
Back to the point you've been making all along.
Yeah, it may not be 12 to 20 million, but it might be 4, 5, 6 million
right.
that's short. And I tend to think that they just needed to make the thing square in the corner, and they called up the Revenue Department and said, "You sure we can't knock a little of that off?" And, well, we're a little fat, but be careful. And what does little fat mean? Is it all right?
Well, that may be one of the factors going into the $60 million shortfall of balancing the governor's current projected budget. I don't know whether it is, because we've totaled up close to $45 million here in this committee so
mm-hmm.
far. That may be the difference. I don't know.
Another.
Who has admitted to that $60 million figure?
No one other than we piecemealed
okay.
it in this committee. If
I
you
just,
recall,
yeah,
we have been piecemealing as we go along. I've got, I think, the total figure I've got up my desk, but I think it was about $43 million, I recall, because we ticked off a number of
yes.
items.
Another thing to in that regard is that when this number came out, the 538, that was before the final numbers for 8081. Were discovered, and they came out on the HARP and ERA about $2 million over what their estimate had been for purposes of making those reversions and all that, and about a million more on the 30%. So there were about $3 million over their estimate just before they made this other estimate, and so that might lead you to believe that
Senator Trope, during the interim Revenue Committee did consider property 30% program and did vote, I think, with one vote the other way in favor of recommending continuation. At that point, we had a figure of how much it would cost. Is that the same figure we have now?
No, I don't think so.
What was that figure? It seemed to me it was less than 538.
I think it was, now that I'm trying to remember back then.
Because the argument was
right.
this is a much less percentage increase
right.
than everybody thought, so we can afford the program, let's go ahead and recommend it again. And
I don't think it was certainly over $500 million.
Was it?
But it seems to me like it was 520 or something like that.
So
It
seems to me that that was the figure, 520 or something is the figure that we were shooting with last session as we were putting this together as to the expected potential increase. Didn't someone try to come up with...
To look at the long term?
Take an average increase in levies and that sort of thing and then bring it back and say, okay, what would be the next...
I don't think we were anticipating a 17% increase in levies back during the interim. So
yeah, I think that's probably the difference.
Figure of like 520.
Yeah.
And since this big increase this last time, it's the primary impetus behind this 538.
Senator Monroe.
And that factor, plus the fact that we've been in a recessionary situation, which caused a lowering of people's incomes, which would tend to increase HARP payments. Is that right?
That's true.
So you've got two factors working, both of which increase the cost of the program, the overall cost of the program.
Is the HARP figure given here for 81, 83 different than we got in the interim right at the end when we talked about both these?
This 168?
Yeah.
That seems...
Is that the same?
It's not. This is a governor's figure. I'm sure it wasn't the same as we were talking about at the interim, because that was just something you asked for in the committee that Rich came running over and said, here, give us a number so we got something to deal with. So I sat down and worked it out real quickly on a piece of paper.
A lot of important decisions were made on those numbers last time. We had quite a discussion about whether we could afford the programs or not. And the numbers were reassuring to a lot of people, so it seems like there ought to be some accuracy.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day?
Well, I really think what's happened is that they looked at a 10% budget level, and this figures out about 12%. And that's how they arrived at it. They arrived at actual impact. Senator Moreau said he's absolutely right. Your income lowers, potential liability increases, and if they didn't take the true actuals on the 17% or close to it, then it's more than $20 million underestimated here. So that's what we got to find. I presume you're working on this.
That's right. We're working on it.
Are you looking at income level effect?
That's right. We have a HARP model that allows us to put in assumptions about increases of income and increases in levies. Well, increases lower than they otherwise might be.
All right.
And because it's all on a money basis, and as opposed to real income, and then would spit out a number for us. And that's what we do.
Okay. When are you going to have that?
Well,
we don't need it till August.
I know you and the rest of us are a little more anxious than the rest,
we're just jumping the gun.
This enlightened committee would wonder if we could see that in the near future.
The executive
I think we're going to be in the enlightened committee, not the
executive department. Did testify today officially that they do not plan a May estimate, that they're going to wait until June.
Yeah. You're kidding?
No. And I think it's ludicrous, but that's the way it's going. They're not going to know much more in June, and we're going to wait for nothing.
The executive department says that?
Yes. You know, they had said it before. It was in the press before, but this is the first time that they actually...
Don't they realize that some of us legislators teach school and we're used to summer vacations?
We can recess. Well, that's what we ought to do to them, is recess and say we'll come back in about 3 months. Get your act together.
There's...
Our biggest problem, Senator Day, on the data has been that this last year's data has been very slow in coming in.
Oh, I'm not faulting. I guess what I'm saying is that we sat down here...
And 2 years from now is very unpredictable.
...in the orientation and tried to relate to the governor's budget and the ingredients that have been placed in there. And this is very definitely one that could loom larger than any of us anticipate, because I think their shortfall of revenue is going to be about another $100 million if we follow projections. They got a $60 million... level that they didn't even budget for, you see. And you add those two up, plus the tax increase they say is necessary to balance their current budget, you're looking at about $400 million. You add this factor to it, you're developing some rather significant dollars.
It's not the cost of this program.
That's right.
It's much more than
that. It's $600 million right now, if you count the special fees.
We haven't even started. I mean, and you're not talking about program improvement.
No, you're talking about the level the governor's estimated budget.
The programs. So if you wanted to come up to snuff, you're talking, you could, I don't think you'd have to stretch your imagination to get to 800, 900 million.
Well, about a billion.
Maybe a billion.
A billion. Your fees account, which 30% of it in the fees is tuition. But you're looking at $96 million, which they have on a sheet they gave us, unknown until we asked them to make it, you know, I mean, our staff made it known.
Now you know why, back there, way back when, was it Hoover or one of those during that administration, when Congress said, let them print some money. Well, I don't want to make this decision.
We don't have that printing press in the sky. That's why we're looking to
spend a little more than we got. Now, we'll fix it up next biennium, fellas, and then next biennium, let them print some more.
We spent too much last biennium.
Yes.
That was obvious.
Yep.
What do you
we
think?
We didn't spend too much. We just didn't work hard enough to earn enough money to pay taxes on during the interim. Now, some of us got to start producing around here. You're going to get kicked off the team.
Okay. Do you think you'd have that in a week or so?
I don't think we can get it.
All right. What, 30 days?
I just this morning when I came in, Ron told me that Rich had got our sample pulled to run the heart model.
Trying to get
now
that
they switch
data
computers down there, and if things are okay with the program with the new computer, then it won't be that long. But
what's the outlandish of a month?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all.
And there will be trouble with the computer. You just can't.
We have
can't
a little bit of trouble with the school finance model. We got that right finally. So I hope the HARP will be okay. It's simpler.
Doesn't the computer know that it works for us, we don't work for it?
You got a lesson. Wait until you meet the computer.
Big guy.
It only knows how to program it into it.
The renters work the same way as the homeowners, except that, well, of course, the same basic structure. Household income determines the maximum relief payment, and your property tax after the 30% relief are the two maximum payments. In the case of renters, the maximum relief payment is half of the maximum relief payment for the homeowners. And the property tax is assumed to be 17% of rent. So then you get either the maximum payment for your income, or you get 17% of rent as your HARP payment. 17% of rent after the 30% relief, and the equivalent 30% relief is 4.7% of rent. Now, if you multiply that out, 30% times 17, you won't get 4.7.
4.9?
And the reason is that there is about a 10% adjustment made for bonds that the state doesn't pay for homeowners, so they won't pay them here. And the committee last time just arbitrarily reduced this equivalent payment for the average of what is taken away from the homeowners. We got to 4.7. So in effect, then, the maximum HARP payment is then 12.3%. Although they all come together in one payment, so the maximum total payment is 17%. Then there is another program called Elderly Rental Assistance that is run through the HARP program, or right alongside, same application. And that program is available to people who are over 58 years old, under $5,000 in income, and whose rent is greater than 40% of their income. They have to be over 58, under 5,000 in income. Your rent has to be over 40% of your income. The payment is the amount of the excess over 40%. So if your rent is 60% of your income, then 20% of your income is what you're going to get.
Your income has to be under 5,000?
Income has to be under 5,000. And the maximum payment is $2,100. So and if you look there on the last page of that cost figures, you can see that doesn't cost $3.5 million in 8081, $3.9 million in 7980. Total cost was about $7.4 million in the last biennium. So it's not a big program, and primarily it's because of that income limit, 5,000 income limit, limits its application, and also the age limitation. And thirdly, you get either the ERA payment or the HARP payment, whichever is greater. It's done straight through the HARP form. You fill out the HARP form. There, the Department of Revenue will give you, as an elderly person, if you remember to write down your age, will give you whichever is the greatest. So you don't have to specifically apply for the ERA. You'll get it if you do the HARP form.
Does the form tell them that? If
yes,
you are over a certain age, you should tell us.
It does, yes. And you also, there is a whole thing in there about elderly rental assistance, and it has a worksheet in there so you can calculate it if you want to. And there is a slight difference in the concept of rent under this. Rent includes utilities for elderly rental assistance. It is not for the rest, for the normal part. So there's a special line for elderly rental assistance that says what is your utility cost if it's not already included in the rent.
Chairman, it appears to me that virtually any renter with an income of under $5,000 would be eligible for this.
If they're over 58 years old.
Yeah, any renter over 58 years old, because if their income was clear up to the $5,000 to the maximum, 40% comes out to $166, and if their rent. Their rent and utilities would be bound to be more than that, I would think.
It just depends on their situation. There are some.
I suppose there are some rural areas where you might be able to get rent pretty cheap still, but.
You have some of these people are in nursing homes and that kind of thing too, and only a certain percentage of the total cost of maintaining them in the nursing home you can count as for rent. And actually, most of those wouldn't make it into this because there's only say 20% of their total cost is. So you have a lot of, when you're getting down into that income level, you just have a lot of special cases. Because it's really hard to live if you're only making $5,000 a year. So.
And these people on welfare and so forth, that are nursing home would be eligible?
Yes, except that if they're in a nursing home, actually they wouldn't probably make it in ERA. They'd be eligible under HARP.
Yeah.
Except that you do have to include the welfare payment in your income. That's the part that's included in income.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, in the normal HARP program, you have some special ways that they handle ADC payments. Because there is included an allowance for HARP in aid to dependent children payments. And then the HARP payment is reduced by that that's included in the ADC payment. The reason they do that is that the federal government picks up something like 50% or 55% of all ADC payments. And so instead of paying these people HARP payments, what we've done is we've shifted it over into the ADC payment so that the feds would pick up some of it. And then we reduce the HARP payment at the time that the HARP return comes in. And the Department of Human Resources sends a tape over of all the people that got any kind of welfare payments, including ADC payments, to the Department of Revenue, and they run it against the filers and make the appropriate adjustments.
What do they do if someone that under a guardianship in a nursing home, does this go to their guardian or does it go direct to the nursing home, or how do they handle it?
I think the payment has to go direct to the renter. It can't go to the nursing home.
So the guardian would be the person.
Yeah, right, in case of a guardian. Right.
Well, a lot of those people are under that.
There are some interesting situations now in some of the mental health group homes where there is really a question is in the way that the mental health makes the payment to the home, it's a direct payment to the home and not to the individual. That's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is it's a payment for the whole service, not just for the individual that's in it. It's not on a per individual
right.
basis. So there's some question as to whether that's rent at all. And so there's some question as to whether those people are eligible for HARP. You've got, in the end, when you get into the whole way that HARP interacts with the welfare system, you got some, it gets real technical. And you may even see some bills on that. So. Only one more thing, and this mainly mention this because we've got a lot of questions on it.
Let's see if it's real technical.
Nothing. I'm afraid of anything that you say might be real technical.
We're digesting on a very limited basis right at this point.
I have trouble keeping up with your simple stuff.
Now, we've had a lot of questions about eligibility dates. So I think if I can get it out on one blackboard, it's easier to understand. You've got really two kinds of dates. You've got qualification date and application date. So there's the dates that you have to have a certain status to qualify, and then there's dates that you have to apply by for these different programs. I know I'm confusing the clerk because she can't see the board, but this is her first day. Margaret knows what's going on. Oh, wait, this is wrong. What am I doing? Oh, homeowners and renters.
Clerk will put that in the minutes that the staff made a mistake.
Block letters.
Qualification date for a homeowner for the HARP program is December 31st. So you have to be a homeowner on December 31st to qualify for HARP. For the 30% program, it's June 30th. So you have to be a homeowner on June 30th to qualify for the 30% program as a homeowner.
Now, Jim, there have been no problems of people transferring homeownership? That is, well, I mean, if they're buying, is there a way that if you're buying a house but you haven't finalized the deal and you're selling your house, or say your deal closed on June 29th, but your deal did not close on the house you're buying until July 1st, you or people being caught in that, or they just go ahead and say, yes, I was, and sign the affidavit thinking if the government wants to send me to jail for that technicality, go ahead. Are you aware of anybody that hit that?
I've heard of cases where somebody missed it by one day.
A young couple buying a new house, I could understand where that, they're going to have I don't know how many houses trade hands each year, but out of that number, you're gonna have a few hundred people that buy a house on July 1st. In fact, I would imagine that's a pretty good time to close a deal on a house.
It may not be July 1st, it may be any date after June 30th.
Yeah.
And there are quite a few people that get themselves in that situation. It's mitigated somewhat by the fact that the relief stays with the home. So if the home is qualified, I think you're talking about one problem where maybe for some reason the home
was
that the person moved out of before June 30th and moved into
or if somebody was renting, maybe somebody was renting the house. And right. Now this couple's buying it for their home.
Right. There have been, I'd say of all the constituent stuff that we get from the different members, I've probably got more on these dates than anything else.
Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Senator Monroe.
If you get a smart title company and a good broker, they'll pick that up and it'll be in the prorate.
But see, that's the problem. That's why I think that that's where all these dates should be centered.
The same.
They should be dealt with at that point. You know, it's like I had a bill in here to last night or so to make life insurance a mandatory part of a settlement in a divorce case. So that at least the heirs are changed if that's, you know, that there's some kind of a settlement on that whole thing. Because I had two constituent cases where a guy had a lot of life insurance, divorced, remarried, he dies, and then they look at his insurance policies, and this woman, his former wife, who just married a doctor, is the recipient. And it would just simply clarify it, say, okay, who's going to be the beneficiary? Let's get it on paper. Maybe it should be that former wife. I'm not saying that. But the point was, in the two cases that were brought to my attention, who should have handled that? The lawyers. And so when I introduced the bill, lawyers say, oh, yeah, we take that. We've got a little form here. We always fill all this out. But apparently it slips through somewhere. Same thing with the escrow and the title companies and real estate people putting these deals together.
Oh, they do screw up.
Yeah.
I can attest to it.
If we could inform them of the law so that they could help their clients, would be one step in the right direction. But I don't know how to do that.
you get people caught in the midst of a lot of, like, you get them caught in the midst of the difference in these two, and the difference in these two, and the difference in these two. You get them every which way. And
There's one other qualification that I'm not, don't know that you're going to hit, and that is ownership means outright ownership or life estate.
There's some bill that's in now that deals with those technical legal, what ownership is.
It's a tough thing, because I had a constituent who not only built the house, paid taxes on the house, but is selling it to his son along with a farm, and has five-year consecutive leases, which puts him into over 100 years old, and he can't get property tax relief on his house, and he's on a limited income. So there's just no way he could, because it didn't say lifetime estate. And if he said lifetime estate, there was something wrong in the estate system they set up, that the lawyers did not want to put lifetime estate, because it encumbers the property somehow. I think
the life estates are allowed.
They are, but it has to be
whatever the technical or the legal definition.
You could say that the person had 2,000 years of consecutive renewable leases, and it wouldn't qualify. But if you said he had a lifetime estate, it would qualify.
But there's some other tax reason apparently why they didn't want to do that.
Yes, there is. Or an encumbrance on the property or something.
Anyway, there are bills in on that. For the HART program, be not a homeowner on December 31st. That's how you become a renter. And the same over here on the 30%. Be not a homeowner. In other words, you don't have to be renting on that day. You just have to be not a homeowner.
That's a June 30th again, or December?
December 31st.
Since we've got the 3 December 31st there, what would happen if we could change the 30% now to December 31st?
Well, remember now, the reason that it's this way is that the HART program, both the homeowner and the renter, and the 30% equivalent rent relief is made after the fact through the income tax system. And that's why you have a December 31st date, because everybody's on a calendar year. This is prospective relief. In other words, you have to qualify before you get the relief. Here you qualify after you get the relief. So if you had a December 31st date, it would have to be, this date would be, if this were equivalent to that date, it would be after you got your tax statement. Yeah. You would qualify. And that's just, you can't work the system that way, for one thing. Not only because it's hard to get them the payment, even if we could pay refunds, but we also use the homeowner status to qualify you for the lower assessment ratio. And so there's no way that
Building in a lag year.
Right. There's no way that the assessor could figure out the values for purposes of determining the rate when he doesn't know where all the homesteads are.
Yeah, just think about it. I don't think if you designed a program to pick the worst possible date to have that deadline, I don't think you could find a more perfect worst possible date than the end of June and the 1st of July. Mm-hmm. I would think that a lot of jobs and businesses start new jobs and transfer and all those sorts of things on that fiscal year. And
what happens if we move it to a calendar year?
And you move the whole property tax system on a calendar year?
What happens?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, is there something mystical about this that the world ends?
Probably the political world for some, but the regular world.
That may end anytime. Yeah. I mean, hell, you take that crack anytime you want.
It's just you're talking about changing the fiscal years of all the local tax districts in order.
School districts and everything else. Yeah. It'd really be hard for school districts.
That's the only real problem. Or either that, or there'd have to be some real big adjustments. If you don't change the fiscal years of the district, then you'd be getting all that money in May. And I don't know how you do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Application dates are all the same. All
no. Yeah, right. They're not the same. The homeowner on the HART program, the date is April 15th for the application date, plus 3 years. So So it's just like the income tax. If you have a refund due, the statute of limitation runs out after 3 years. So there's a normal filing date for the income tax, April 15th, plus 3 years. Same for HARP on the renter. And the same for the 30% on the renter.
What does that 3 years mean? I don't understand that.
Well, if you have a refund due on your income tax, you don't have to file by April 15th filing date that's normal for the income tax. You've got, in effect, 3 years after that date before you can file for that year.
An amended form,
I see.
Well, you don't even have to do an amended. If you haven't filed a form to begin with, you just go back and get one of those old ones and file it.
But you pay the penalties and all that?
You know, there's no penalty since you didn't owe any tax.
Oh, okay.
See, these are all refunds.
Okay.
And just like income tax.
So you can go back and claim those refunds even though you did not have a tax liability?
That's right. If you with money was withheld from you, or if you're due a property tax refund, you can still file for up to 3 years after the normal filing date. The only penalties that are applied for late filing of your income tax are if you owe tax and you didn't pay it.
So if a youngster was working in the summers in their high school years, sophomore, junior, and senior year, and withholdings were being taken, but yet they had no tax liability, they could wait till their senior year and then file and get it all at that time.
Right. It would-